Grounded fair over the bag. LeMahieu is screaming that it was foul. The Royals will get Benintendi to the plate. Salvi goes to third, and Carlos Santana gives the Royals a 3-1 lead. Operations. There's a line drive to deep right. Michael A. Taylor goes to the opposite field, and the Royals tie the game in the bottom of the third inning at one.
All right, so that was Michael A. Taylor with the home run, tied the game at one. Then you heard Carlos Santana finally getting a base hit for the boys in blue, as that gave the Royals a 3-1 lead. The Royals would actually lead 4-1 at one point in the fifth inning, but it was all for naught, and the Royals get swept by the Yankees. Yankees score two in the fifth to cut it to 4-3, take the lead in the seventh against the Royals bullpen, and Aaron Judge with a solo homer for insurance in the ninth. Daniel Lynch gets a no decision. Pitch okay, five innings, four hits, three runs, four Ks, and the Royals get swept. Lost the Yankees 12-2, 3-0, and then eventually 6-4. Royals never seem to do well against the Yankees. Yankees have won 9 in a row, and the Royals fall to 7-13. And more bad news, the Royals scratched third baseman Bobby Witt Jr. from the lineup about an hour before yesterday's season series finale against the Yankees at Kauffman Stadium because of a right wrist contusion. Just cautionary is what they're being, very precautious about that. And so he did not play. And now Cam Gallagher is on the IL with a hamstring injury, the backup catcher for the Royals, which means the Royals' top catching prospect and one of the top hitting prospects in all of baseball is going to be called up to the major leagues today. That is catcher MJ Melendez. He will be called up for AAA Omaha here today. Manager Mike Matheny announcing that after the Royals' loss. And as we mentioned, Cam Gallagher with a grade 2 hamstring strain goes on to the 10-day injured list. And the Royals are supposed to play a makeup game today against the Cardinals at 3:15, but due to the impending weather, they've moved that up 3 hours, which is a very smart move on their part. 12:15 at Busch Stadium, Royals Cardinals. The game originally was set for April 13th, postponed due to inclement weather, moved to today, and now moved even sooner to 12:15. And then the Cardinals will travel to Kansas City, as will the Royals, because they're already in St. Louis to play today for one game, and they'll play two in Kansas City, as the Royals have not won a season series against the Cardinals since 2016. Zach Greinke is scheduled to toe the rubber for the boys in blue today. Steven Matz will be the pitcher for the Cardinals. He used to be a pretty good pitcher for the New York Mets. So that's the wrap-up of the Royals from over the weekend. The Beloit Relays took place over the weekend, on Friday, actually. But that was part of the weekend. I've been told Friday's part of the weekend. Is that true, Jason? Friday's part of the weekend?
Once you get past your working hours, uh-huh, it's the weekend.
Perfect. So that means Dusty's weekend didn't begin till 2 a.m. on Saturday. But Dusty did a great job with the reports from the Bullet Relays on Friday. And give you all of this is posted at nckssports.com. Carly Colgan of Concordia won the 100-meter hurdles in the girls' 3-4A classification breakdown, because that's how they broke it into divisions. So it was girls 3A and 4A together. Colgan won the 300 hurdles. And I'm just going to give you the gold medalists, because there's lots of people that finished in the top six locally. Tatum Seifert of Beloit won the discus, 115 feet. And J.C. Carter of Beloit finished second, 114 feet, 2 inches. So Beloit takes 1-2 in the discus. And on the girls' side, also Tatum Seifert and J.C. Carter went 1-2 in the shot put. Tatum with a throw of 40 feet, 1 inch. And Carter right behind, 38, 10 and a quarter. And other gold medalists from our area. I think that wraps it up for the 3-4A girl division. Beloit finished in sixth place with 53 points. Chapman won it with 94. Abilene was second. Looking at the girls' 1-2A division, those from the area that won gold medals as I scroll through here. Sophia Thompson of St. John's won the high jump at 5'3". Jennifer Cochran of Thunder Ridge was 5', and Lauren Brumman of Lakeside, 5', finished in a tie for second, and then Cochran won the tiebreaker for second, and Brummett third. And Tori Slavik of Thunder Ridge won the discus, 121 feet, 3 inches. And Addison Poor of Osborne won the 800-meter run. And Grace William of Osborne won the shot put with a throw of 36 feet, 9 and a quarter. And the girls' 3,200 relay team, the 4x800 relay team for Osborne, they end up winning the gold in that race. And Cameron Hutchison Smith Center won the javelin with a throw of 120 feet. And the team standing, Sacred Heart 1. That was my phone doing that. Sacred Heart wins the team standings in the girls 1A, 2A division with 69 points. Smith Center was third with 62. Osborne fourth with 61. Lakeside scored 37 points. St. John's 22. And Thunder Ridge with 18. Sylvan Lucas with 6. And Lincoln with 3. That's all posted to ncksports.com. Shifting to the boys. The 3-4A division from Friday at the Bullet Relays. Let's see here. Who we have local that won a gold? Grady Seifert in the discus of Bullet, 171 feet, 8 inches. That beat the second-place finisher by almost 20 feet. So he won that easily. And then Grady winning the shot, put easily by 10 feet at 56 feet, 1 inch. Eli Johnson, Bullet, finished second. And Concordia won the 4x800 relay. And Brendan Walker won the javelin with a throw 179 feet, winning that by 10 feet. And the team standing, Southeast Lane ran away with it, 142 points. Concordia second with 83. Beloit finished in fifth with 51 points in the boys' 3-4A division for the Beloit Relays on Friday. And then the boys' 1A, 2A division, Nate Myers of Rock Hills won the long jump. Mason Scher of Osborne won the 100-meter dash. Keaton Reeves of Pike Valley won the 110 hurdles. It was Mason Scher winning the 200-meter dash. And Jay Schoen was second in that. Ben Thompson third for St. John's. And Schoen from Lakeside, of course. There's 300 hurdles. Keaton Reeves of Pike Valley taking first in that. And how about this for the high jump? Brogan Rowley, I don't know how it's pronounced, from El Saline. He is a freshman. And he high jumped 6 feet 10 inches.
Whoa.
Just missed the meet record, and he's only a freshman. That is pretty amazing stuff. Trey Collins of Tipton finished in second. Mason Scher wins the 400. Pretty good day for Mason Scher. Wins the 100, the 200, and the 400. And the 400 relay, the 4x1. Osborne took first in that. Lincoln was third. And Smith Center wins the 4x400 boys relay. Tipton second. And the shot put, Dylan Coos of Sylvan Lucas wins it by a foot over Colton Harrisnape of Smith Center. And that looks to be about it for the area gold medalist. And the team standings in 1A, 2A boys from Friday and Bullet Relays, El Saline winning the team title, 76 points. Osborne second, 67. Smith Center third at 56. Pike Valley fourth at 50. Tipton at 31 points. Lakeside 23. St. John's 21.5. And Thunder Ridge at 13. Rock Hills 10. And Sylvan Lucas 10. And Lincoln 7. All of that is posted at ncksports.com. And once again, thanks to Dusty for all those reports throughout the day on Friday. Thanks to our sponsors for making those reports possible.
6'10".
6'10". Yeah, I can't jump 6 inches, let alone 6 foot 10. 6 foot 10. Well, I mean, Brady Paulin, he high jumps for Wichita State University. Good friends with him and his family. And he's over 7 foot. Yeah, but this kid's a freshman in high school, and he's already at 6'10". Scary stuff. Just better not eat too much. That'll cause you not to jump as high.
Right.
I never did learn that. I've got the credit card up. So 6 inches would be unbelievable for me.
6 feet, 10 inches.
That just defies gravity and logic, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Good for that kid, though.
I didn't have anything near that. I did do the high jump in junior high, but
you did high jump in junior high?
I did.
I tried it in junior high too. Yeah. I think I got over 5 foot. That was it.
I think we got to a couple of us got to like 5'8" or something like that.
I didn't get
but
that.
But then we got to a certain meet, and the guy just said, "Yeah, we're putting this at 5'10" to start."
Like, we're out.
Me and my buddy were like,
"We're out."
Yeah, we're out.
We're done.
Out. We're done.
Time to pick a different event or a different sport, right?
And then I went to golf because I didn't want to finish. You know, to see me now, you wouldn't believe it, but I had skinny days back
in
high
school.
Skinny
days?
Yeah.
Skinny jeans?
But I wasn't strong enough to compete in the shot put. I wasn't fast enough to win. So I would have finished halfway in all of the events, and that's not going to win anybody any points. And I lived by the golf course, and grandma got me started on golf anyway, so I was going
to
do that.
The great thing about golf is you really don't have to jump.
No jumping.
Except
no jumping.
If you got to jump into the water to find your ball, which I don't recommend you jump, just walk into it. Oh, yes, golf, good stuff. Speaking of golf, there's supposed to be the Southeast Saline Invitational in Salina today. I don't know if that's going to take place. I would doubt it, but I haven't received any information that's been canceled. Baseball today, Lincoln, Minneapolis, Sylvan Lucas in Minneapolis. Softball, Lincoln, Minneapolis baseball, TMP Sacred Heart baseball. They may or may not have those games due to the weather, but I think we're okay with trying to. I know ADs don't like to hear this when you have to reschedule something, but we need the rain. So
right.
We'll deal with it. the best that we can. Once again, for full local sports information, visit ncksports.com. Before we analyze the Chiefs draft, just give you an idea of what my day was Friday. And Jason and I were having fun with this on Friday. And little did I know when I last saw Jason on Friday that my day was just beginning.
Right.
Because Friday it all started with Jason calling me at 6 in the morning saying, "Hey, man, my car doesn't start. Need a ride to work." And then Dusty, who's already going to have a long day, Jason got a hold of him. He came in to fill in for Waterside Wake Up on Friday. So we were just getting started. Then we had a little bit of a computer issue we dealt with around noon. We fixed that once we figured it out, so that wasn't a major problem. There's so many things that went wrong on Friday. I'm trying to think about in the order that they went. You remember what came after that?
The power outage.
Oh, yes, the power outage. How could I forget the old power outage?
You had left.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had just left.
You had just left.
And then I saw Dusty put on Twitter, due to some kind of power outage, we're off the air. So then I called Eldon, and he said, it's a Prairie Land thing. They're going to try to fix it. There was some accident on Highway 9. Like, okay, so then we're off the air for about 40 minutes. And then I'm walking Jason through, because I had to head to Abilene for baseball and then eventually to Wichita right after that for a basketball tournament. So I walked Jason through to, once the power came back up, how to get us back on the air. So I know Jason was enlightened by that experience.
Well, it's fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a blast. But Jason did a great job, followed the instructions, figured it out, and got it done. So we're back on the air. So that was good. Okay, anything else after that for you?
Well, it was just figuring out all the computer monitors and all the computers that needed to be
rebooted.
Turned on, and we got it done.
It's overwhelming a little bit.
Derek had to remind me for the streaming computer, but
that's okay.
We got it.
So when the power goes out, like, some stuff comes back up, some stuff doesn't. Can't explain why, but that's just the way it is. So we deal with it. Part of the beauty behind the scenes of radio that people think is so flashy. It is flashy when the lights are going, that's not good. So then I take off, and I'm talking to Jason as we're headed to Abilene for baseball. And we thought the baseball started at 4, so we think we're running behind, leaving at 3 from Beloit. So we're hustling, bustling, and we get there, and then we find out the game started at 4:30. So it's like, oh, well, I guess that's one way to kick us in the pants and get us there on time, finally. So we get there, and we play 2 innings, and I see the weather coming from the south, and I'm like, we're not going to get these games in tonight. And there was no lightning, but apparently there was a lightning detected on somebody's phone, so they shut it down. I think we could have played another inning or two, but what's the point? It wouldn't have mattered. Right. We wouldn't have had an official game anyway. And so the team has to stay in the bus, including our son, because they're hoping this blows by and that they can resume action, which I felt like there was probably no chance of that. But I understand trying. So we were like, well, the heck with this. We ain't going to sit in the car waiting forever. We're going to go eat. So the rest of the boys and my wife and I, we went to eat. So we're in this restaurant in Abilene. And we're close to being done eating, and all of a sudden everybody's phones go off at the exact same time in this restaurant. There's the alert, and it says tornado warning for Abilene and Dickinson County until I think it was 6:45. And so I'm looking like, okay, how do we handle this? I've never been in this situation before. I'm looking around like, where is there to hide and take shelter in the restaurant? And nobody was offering to say, okay, everybody, let's go downstairs. You know, if there was a downstairs. So everybody just kind of looks around like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. And then they just go, so what would you like to order? I would like, dude, there's a tornado warning. So I didn't panic, but I'm looking at the radar left and right, and it's still further south of Abilene. And so we finish eating. And I said, you know what, looking at this, I think it'd be wise of us to get in the car, go to I-70, which is just, Abilene's just south of I-70, get to I-70, and let's work our way west, because it said the mile markers 271 through 275 on I-70 be impacted by the possible tornado that might occur. So I'm like, let's go west, because I know it's going to move east. So let's go west and get past that mile marker and see where we're at. So we did, and we looked back to the south, and we saw a funnel. It wasn't a big funnel, but it was starting to come out of the sky. You could see it and so forth. We never did see an actual tornado touchdown. There was a brief touchdown, I've been told, that evening there around the Abilene area or south of Abilene. So we got out of the area, and so the boys, the baseball team, had to go to a shelter underneath the football grandstands because of a tornado warning. They're not allowed to go ahead and drive and beat it like we did. And then just when they're about ready to be released and odds are they're not going to play, then another tornado warning. So now they got to wait another whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So they're under the grandstands for over an hour, if not longer. So we're driving towards Solomon exit. And then eventually, like, we're just going to go to Solana. We'll meet the bus there because we got to pick up our son to go to Wichita for basketball. We get to Solana, and the wind is just, you're looking forward to the west, and it's just all dirt. And then all of a sudden, we get alert on our phone saying that there's a wind advisory blowing dirt, and people need to pull off side of the roads because there'll be visibility down to zero. And so as we're pulling in towards this travel 24-7 off of exit 252 in Salina so we can meet the bus, there's like a piece of some business's marquee comes flying off and slides in front of our car by about 100 feet in front of us. I'm like, dear Lord, I ain't going to be in. I don't want to be parked anywhere near any marquees. I mean, the wind's just whipping 60 to 70 miles an hour at some point, probably. Our car's, we got a little SUV and it's wobbling back and forth. And I'm like, oh, man. And so we wait. Eventually, the bus gets there from Beloit. We pick up our son, and then they can't really travel with that until the wind dies down or at least the warnings go off. So they go to eat somewhere. And so we jump in. My oldest son jumps in with us, and then we go south. And luckily, we're going south. North was a little bit worse. So we go south on 135 towards Wichita, and then there were cars at – there was probably four different points of time between Salina and, I would say, Heston, where people had pulled over on the side of the interstate because there was no visibility because all the dirt flying through. Now, as long as I could see taillights in front of me, I didn't pull over and stop, but I went extremely slow. And then, you know, once you got through that wave of dirt, you were okay, and there's another wave of dirt. And it's just insane, the way the sky looked, because we looked back to the east, and it was just dark blue. And then, of course, all of a sudden, it was lighter blue because it just, you could tell it unleashed all its rain and hail and everything else. So we're driving, we're listening to the radio. My youngest son is on the iPad, and he pulled up the weather, and he had, I don't know if it was cake TV out of Wichita. Anyway, they're doing live reports of what they think is going to be a tornado. They believe going to be the Andover area. And we're driving towards Wichita like, what in the world? Like, we're going to be good. That's going to be to the east. We roll into Wichita. We get there. We get to our hotel. Right before we get to the hotel, it starts hailing on us a little bit. Not too bad. We make it there safely, and that's great and all. Okay, so you're thinking the day is probably about over. Then, and it was. Then the next morning, I get pictures and people telling me that there's shingles off the radio stations. It gets better. So I'm sitting there in Salina with my family waiting on my son to pick him up from the bus to go to Wichita. Dusty calls me. How could I forget this? So Dusty calls me, and he says, well, you're not going to like what I'm about to tell you. I'm like, well, then why the hell are you calling me? I'm joking. So he goes, yeah, we're off the air. The satellite dish they just put up, this new dish to replace the old outdated one, apparently wasn't tied down as well as it should have been. And, of course, there was high winds, and so it knocked the dish off the line to the satellite in the sky, and thus we are off the air with no music. He says, I'm going to go ahead and fill all the logs with the song, so forth and so on, and then he's going to head out for his vacation. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. So then we eventually get to Wichita. He takes care of that. I figure we probably won't be back on air when we get back from Sunday, as long as, you know, we're on air, but we're not off of satellite programming. So the listeners maybe didn't know much of the difference. And on Saturday, I get the pictures of shingles off. Then I get later Saturday afternoon, my neighbor says, I think some shingles blew off your house. I'm like, dear Lord. Well, is the house still standing? Okay, good. That's good. And we roll through all of that. Then we come back yesterday and come over, and luckily our engineer was able to come down, get us back on line with the satellite, so we have all of the regular music that we have and still have to load everything. And so it's been a long weekend for all three of us, but it all started, and it's all Jason's fault because his car perpetuated everything. His car breaking down started that whole horrible roll of events that snowballed. But that 24 hours, we were joking, Jason and I, about, man, this is not a good Friday. This is like a Monday. And this was the middle of Friday. It only got worse the rest of the day. So think about this. Car breakdown, computer problems, wind problems, tornadoes that were dodging, hail, dirt storms, and everything else. It's just, it was a complete Friday, to say the least. I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you this is what we went through. We have our health. We're safe. And people listening may say, listen, man, you can't be complaining. I'm not complaining. I'm just stating to you what took place. It was a long, crazy, wacky, weird, wild day. But you know what? it's a lot better what we had to go through than the people in Andover trying to find what's left of their house.
And right now, the car's running. Right now, the satellite's running.
Yes.
Right now, Dusty's...
Right now, the key to
right now, Dusty is enjoying his vacation.
Oh,
we've
seen some
pictures of that.
He met Nev Campbell, for crying out loud.
Like, that's...
Are we sure that was Nev Campbell or a wax figure? Wax figures can look lifelike.
That's true.
Yeah.
What if... Yeah,
I don't know. I thought about making a comment about that. I thought, I'm going to do that.
But all's well that ends well, you know.
I hope it's ended.
We hope it ends. But, you know, sometimes, bad news just kind of clumps together sometimes. They say it happens in threes. It's just one of those, it just clumps together, like you said, my car got it started. It just snowballed from there. But like I said, car's running right now. Yep. Satellite's running right now. Mm-hmm. Dusty's enjoying his vacation right now.
Dusty picked a good time to leave.
Yeah.
Real good time. Dusty leaves and everything falls apart.
Yeah.
So we are back on track, or so we think. All right, so the NFL draft, lots of this worries me as a Chiefs fan. When lots of pundits and experts are telling me and everyone else in Chiefs Kingdom that the Chiefs had an A or A-plus draft. And I do love when I see the comments from people about each pick of the Chiefs. Oh, my God, that was unbelievable steal. It's unbelievable they could leave that guy available, blah, 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 blah. Well, they're saying that in other cities with other picks, too.
Right.
So take it with a grain of salt as a Chiefs fan. Listen, I think as a Chiefs fan you should be excited about the draft, but I do want to plant a seed of caution is that no one, and let me repeat this, no one, even Andy Reid and Brett Veach, no one knows if these guys are going to pan out.
Right.
We have no idea. Going from college to pro is a gigantic jump. Some young men are able to make that jump rather easily. Others struggle quite a bit. I'll give you a few examples of the two linebackers that are pretty doggone good. Nick Bolton last year struggled a little bit early, but then really came on. Second-round draft pick. He made that transition to pros fairly well. Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma made a very good transition to center in the NFL. Trey Smith at right guard. The Chiefs did pretty good with their draft last year. They really did. Now I'll go back some years. Derek Johnson was a pick I wanted the Chiefs to make. And it took him probably three full years before he finally started to click to become a Pro Bowl linebacker. It took him a while. And people had said he was a bust after the first year or two. Well, sometimes you can't just label somebody after one or two years. It takes a little bit of time. And that's something that fans don't have, patience. We just don't. We don't have patience. So let's go over the Chiefs draft picks, and then if there's a few other things we want to touch upon the draft, we can. First of all, every team thinks they have a great draft. Let's just start there.
Right.
It started out in round one on Thursday when the Chiefs did trade up from 29 to 21 with the Patriots to pick a corner and Trent McDuffie, who is 5'10.5". He's a really good cover corner. He doesn't make a lot of plays on the ball in regards to getting interceptions or turnovers, although he can make plays on the ball to get deflections and knock it down. But he's a good cover corner. He's a good tackler. You can move him around. He's multidimensional. He can play a slot corner. He can play on the outside. He can play man. He can play zone. He can blitz a little bit, too. He's a very good tackler from what I've seen. So I think it's a solid pick. I'm not convinced the Chiefs had to go from 29 to 21 to get him. However, if they thought he was going to be gone at 26, if the team at 25 doesn't want to trade with you, well, then you just want to, if you really know this is the guy you want, you might have to trade a little bit higher to make sure you get Trent McDuffie. I'm okay with the pick. He came after junior year. He was all Pac-12 last year. I mean, he's a good player, and he really seems to have a good head on his shoulders. Seems to be very down to earth. He lost his brother about 6 years ago, and so... He plays in his spirit, and that's why he wore number 22 at Washington. Looks like it'd be 21 with the Chiefs unless Thornhill and him work out something, because Thornhill wears 22 right now. And so Trent McDuffie was a first-round pick for the Chiefs on Thursday. And then the Chiefs kept their 30th pick, and they drafted George Karlaftis. Is that how you pronounce it?
Karlaftis. I'm not 100%
sure. Okay, Karlaftis. Yeah. He began playing football when he was in eighth grade. When his family moved to West Lafayette, Indiana from Athens, Greece, and he picked up on the game fairly quickly. He had 14.5 sacks in 3 seasons with Purdue. He was a Big Ten first-team performer. He's got a really good motor. This is what cracks me up. So I'm looking at this pick, and I see some people saying it's just a great pick. And I can't believe he's there at 30. And that's exactly what the Chiefs need, edge rusher. And I'm like, he's 266 pounds. He doesn't look super fast to me. He looks like he's got a really good motor. He works hard. That's great. The NFL, you have a great motor, but that doesn't mean you're going to be a superstar. He looks to me like a rotational pass rusher, which with the 30th pick, maybe that's the best you can do. I don't know. And so I wasn't like overly – I was like, it's okay. We'll see. I'm not overly sold that this is a great pick. I could be dead wrong. But then all of a sudden the next day I see people comparing him draft-wise with J.J. Watt, and I about threw up. I'm like, you think this guy – I mean, there's no way I watched him play and go, he looks like J.J. Watt. There's no way I go, oh, yeah, his play resembles or reminds me of J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt was a tool – I think he was at least 2-time defensive player of the year, perennial Pro Bowler. I mean, I don't see that with this guy. Now, if he ends up being J.J. Watt the second, I am all in. I'm cool with it. But I'm a little bit, I don't know, this pick, I'm not, I think this is a boom or bust pick. I think he's going to be either really, really good or he's just going to be average at best. So we shall see. But according to some, they think that's just great first round draft. And it very well could be. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just a little bit leery of the kid. But he has a lot of potential. If he hits the weight room, even harder in NFL. He started playing in eighth grade, which for all you people that are into, you know, playing tackle football in first grade, and my kid's got to play because he'll fall behind. This guy didn't play till his eighth grade year, and now he's a first-round NFL draft pick, which is going to be, he's going to be ahead of pretty much anybody that started playing football in first grade.
Right.
So let's not sit here and say, oh, God, I got to play football to keep up with the Joneses. That's not the case. The second round, of course, the Chiefs actually traded down from pick 50 to 54, and they got their wide receiver. And we mentioned it last week that, you know, George Pickens, Sky Moore, Christian Watson, one of those guys should be there for the Chiefs, and they shouldn't have to trade up. They didn't. In fact, they traded down. Pickens went 2 picks ahead of Moore to the Steelers. Be interested to see how Pickens' career ends up going, and Sky Moore with the Chiefs. And Christian Watson, the Packers, moved up to get him early in the second round. That was a guy a lot of people thought would fit with the Chiefs. Moore is a 2-time first-team All-MAC selection. He started the final 12 games of the year as a true freshman. He has the biggest hands of any receiver in the combine, which is insane because he's only 5'10". He has outstanding speed, and he doesn't drop it much. He's a good route runner. And there are people that think this might be one of the steals of the draft with Sky Moore at 54. Not only did the Chiefs get Sky Moore at 54, but they traded down and got an extra draft pick with the Patriots to move down 4 spots. So there are people that really like Sky Moore. He's out of Western Michigan. I like the pick as well. I do. You know, when you look at drafts in the past, like last year, oh, Nick Bolton. Okay, I don't know. The jury was still out on Bolton. You know, maybe he's undersized at linebacker. All he did was have a great rookie year.
Right.
Creed Humphrey, people said that could be a sleeper pick. And then there are people talking about Trey Smith in the 6th round. Like, dude, the only reason he fell is because he had some blood clot problems. That could be the steal of the draft. I'm going to tell you about a guy that I've been reading about that I feel excited about that the Chiefs picked. And it's not Sky Moore. I'm excited about him. It's not McDuffie. It's not Carl Laftis or Carl Liftis, however you want to pronounce it, Purdue. But the guy that I like the most that I've seen and read about and watched him play is who the Chiefs took with their 62nd overall pick. And they went with a safety. And you may say, well, did they need a safety? They got Justin Reed to replace Tyrann Mathieu. Well, Daniel Sorensen's gone too. And Cook, Sorensen was known as a big hitter. So is Brian Cook, except he's a lot younger. And I think definitely more athletic. And this is a guy that I think could have an impact for the Chiefs and make some plays. From Cincinnati, he was picked there at the very end, late in the second round. I thought that was great value for the Chiefs. So the Chiefs in the first 2 rounds, they end up picking up a corner, an edge rusher, a wide receiver, and those were the 3 biggest needs. And then they pick up a safety who can do some coverage as well. Then in round 3, this is really interesting, and this is why the draft is a crapshoot. In round 3, the Chiefs selected a linebacker, Leo Chanel, and there are some people saying that he was the 71st best value of anybody on the board, and he got picked at 103, that the Chiefs got him around later than he should have gone, And there are people saying that he is a steal, so forth and so on. Unbelievable motor. He is a. He even said when he was drafted, how do you describe your play? He said violent. Like, oh, okay, well, you'll fit in the NFL just fine. And so there are people that really like this pick. When I was reading about it, I'm like, I think I like this guy too. I think this would be a good pick. Did the Chiefs have to have another linebacker? Well, I think it was. I think they needed some depth there. There's no doubt they got that with this kid. He's a baller. He's a football player, flat out. But then I see people talking in other, like CBSSports.com, talking about the worst pick of the draft for each team, and they said he was the worst pick that the Chiefs made. So which is it? We don't know. We have no idea. I don't know. Jason doesn't know. Dusty doesn't know. You listening, wherever you are right now, you don't know if Leo Chanel is going to be a great football player or a bust or a special teams player only. Is he going to be the next Ben Neiman? Or is he going to be better than Ben Neiman? Is he going to be, you know, an outstanding middle linebacker? I don't know. I don't know.
I also saw a thing describing him as thick and square, which for a Wisconsin linebacker is darn near perfect.
Yes, it is. It sounds like a Wisconsin right. linebacker.
Thick and square.
Thick and square. Yeah. Like, is that a compliment or not?
Only on draft weekend is that a compliment.
Right. But, he's a guy that can maybe blitz a little bit off the edge, so that I kind of like that a little bit. He don't have blazing speed, but man, he's a football player. There's no doubt about it.
And he's probably, you know, you kind of got to stagger some of these guys too, contract-wise and age-wise. You might not want to pay Neiman a second contract or whatever.
No, Neiman ain't going to be back.
Right. So you might need somebody that kind of takes that place. And maybe if he's only a rundown guy, so be it. You know, not everybody can be a star. So if he can play a part and be a rundown guy, then so be it. That'll help.
In 2021, he was part of the country's top-rated defense, and he had 8 sacks. So he can rush the passer a little bit, too. So I like that. I think it's a good pick. I think for the value in the third round, pick 103, I like it. Round 4, the Chiefs went with another corner, which corner is a need. You know, there's no doubt about it. And they went with a kid out of Fayetteville State University. This is pretty amazing. Nobody from Texas got drafted, the University of Texas.
I saw that, yeah.
But a guy from Fayetteville State did. Texas has the top recruiting classes, top 10 every year, and they can't even get a guy drafted. They're obviously not coaching him up down in Austin, no matter who the coach is. So Joshua Williams is a corner, and there are a lot of people who think this is a sleeper pick for the Chiefs, that this is a kid that's got good range. He's lanky, a little taller. I think he's like 6'1". And they believe that he could be a diamond in the rough. And think about L'Jarius Sneed. He was a 4th-round draft pick. And I remember people saying the same thing about him from a smaller college. And he's been a really good slot cover corner. So this is a kid that definitely could help this team. And I think there's some intrigue around him out of Little Fayetteville State University. And don't get caught up in little schools and versus USC and Alabama. If you can play, you will be found, and if you can play, you're going to play in the league.
You'd be surprised if you went down a roster and just looked at there's probably 10, 12 small school guys on each team, and it's just amazing on how these people find them and scout them, and then they contribute.
So. Absolutely. So I like that pick. Round 5, now remember last year, guys slid all the way to the 6th round, and that was Trey Smith, and he's our starting right guard. Well, Darian Kennard, he was graded out as a 3rd-round draft pick by some. The Chiefs get him in the middle of the 5th with a 145th pick. He's a big dude, and he projects to be more of a guard in the NFL, according to some, but he played right tackle at Kentucky, and they showed him in the combine absolutely manhandled Jermaine Johnson, who was a 1st-round pick, edge rusher at Florida State. So Kennard is a guy that, who knows, that might be your future right tackle. Because you have questions with Wiley, of course, is just a serviceable backup that steps in when needed. Niang's coming off the ruptured Achilles. You don't know what to count on there. You know, the offensive line of Chiefs looks pretty solid. The left tackle is Orlando Brown. Joe Tooney's your left guard. Creed Humphrey's your center. Trey Smith at right guard. They got a few other guys at backup that can move around, versatile. But right tackle is probably the only question mark on that offensive line. This is a guy that's going to compete against Niang when he's healthy, against Andrew Wiley and others, to be the starting right tackle. Or, if he don't win the job, he'll he'll be definitely a guy who can slide in and play guard. He's a mauler. He's a good run blocker. Andy Reid, are you listening? We might want to run the ball and stick to it a little bit longer like we didn't in the AFC title game. This seems to be a good value pick in round five. And people I know, Chiefs Kingdom said, why do we need a lineman? It's like, well, why would you pass up a third-round talent? And you do have a question at right tackle.
And worst case scenario, you don't get anything from Niang this year or till late. Wiley, doesn't quite pan out.
He's not a starting guy on a regular basis.
It's not ideal, but they can move Tooney out to right tackle. He's got that flexibility.
They could.
And then this is a guy that maybe takes Tooney's spot. And then also at this part of the draft, you can only dress so many linemen. So if you think you can make him a guard and he's already played tackle, then that helps your game day versatility there on, okay, that's a guy we can dress, and if somebody gets hurt during the game, that's a guy that can plug and play at different positions.
He's 6'5", 345 pounds. So looks like a pretty solid pick for the Chiefs. Yeah. Going back to Joshua Williams, Fayetteville State University, he's 6'3". One of the things I don't like about McDuffie in the first round moving up is he's short. I think in this league you need, like, you're trading out Charvarius Ward, who is what, 6'2"? Taller, lanky cover corner, and you're going to trade him out basically for a 5'10 rookie, which I'm not saying he can't play the game, but when there's jump balls, you're 5'10, I don't care how good you are, Jamar Chase is still going to catch the ball on you. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins is going to catch the ball on you. So that's the only thing I didn't like. Whereas this kid, Joshua Williams from Fayetteville State University, he's 6'3". So I like that. I like that. I would feel a lot better with the Chiefs trading up and getting a 6'3", 6'2 corner if it was there, which he wasn't.
And again, I mean, when you get to the red zone, 10 yards in, you're not going to worry about getting beat deep. So maybe you sub out somebody and put in the taller corner, and then that kind of takes away some of the jump balls, in the corners of the end zone, even if it's just that. Yeah.
Chiefs did not have a pick in the sixth round. In the seventh round, they went with another corner. So the Chiefs take three corners and a safety. I had a friend say, man, are you surprised that they took four defensive backs? I'm not overly surprised, and I'll tell you why here in a moment. Jalen Watson, 6'3". I like that. 204 pounds from Washington State. This is a guy that started out as a wide receiver when he was in high school, converted to a DB. He's a two-time junior college All-American at Ventura College in California. He signed at USC. Did not enroll in school, went to Washington State, had a pretty solid career. So you've got Jalen Watson at 7th-round pick. You got Josh Williams, a 4th-round pick. Dobo, 6'3". You got McDuffie, who's an outstanding cover corner, played well in the Pac-12 as your 1st-round pick. And you got the Cook kid, a safety from Cincinnati, that's a thumper. I like it. And I'll finish this draft up here with a couple more. Isaiah Pacheco, a running back for Rutgers, didn't have great stats at Rutgers in regards to yards per carry, so forth and so on. But at the combine, he was the fastest running back there. And he can catch the ball in the backfield a little bit. So there's a toy that we figured the Chiefs would draft a running back late with one of those 7th-round picks. They did. There's a little toy to play with for Andy Reid, and he usually finds a way. He finds a way to get the ball in the hands of the fast guy. So that'll be interesting to see if he can do something for this team. And the last pick the Chiefs made is another corner. So that's the DBs that we talked about. What did they go? 4 corners and a safety?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 5 of their picks end up being defensive backs. And he's 5'10", 199 from Marshall. Odds are he's not going to be a guy that's going to be an impact player. Usually 7th-round picks aren't. But when you look through it, and here's the reason why I'm not surprised the Chiefs went with corners there late in the draft as well, is that the Chiefs lost some significant pieces off of special teams. And one in particular is Byron Pringle. He went to the Bears. Now Byron is in trouble with the law, which I couldn't believe I saw that recently. But Byron Pringle was a very good special teams player for the Chiefs. And you maybe think, oh, yeah, he was a good returner when they put him back here. No. He was a great cover guy. Covering kickoffs and punts. The Chiefs need some guys to play special teams. And when you get to the 6th and 7th round, you're looking at guys that can play special teams and then maybe provide some depth at a position. So when you're looking at the 6th and 7th round picks, you might be looking at, a guy that, like a Marcus Kemp. He's not a great wide receiver, but he's really good in special teams. Or you're looking at a guy that's a corner that can really get down the field and cover, and you've seen him run some special teams. Maybe it's a linebacker, you know. Maybe it's a safety. Daniel Sorensen played. There's another guy they lose off of special teams. Sorensen plays special teams. So the Chiefs did have some need to find some guys to play some special teams, and I would imagine that's part of the thinking behind a few of these picks late in the draft is, first of all, these guys' odds aren't going to be starters no matter what the position are anyway, but can they contribute in special teams, but then also provide a little bit of depth in case there's an injury at corner or linebacker, whatever the case may be. So I'm not as surprised as some about taking the five DBs, but the Chiefs, we thought they'd end up with eight picks. They trade a lot. They did trade a little bit, but they get McDuffie, Karlaftis in the first round. They get a corner, pass rusher, wide receiver in the second, safety in the second as well, so that's four picks. Then they get a linebacker in the third, there's five. A corner in the fourth, there's six. A maybe a steal in the fifth round with Kennard. A lineman, that's seven. And then they used three of their four seventh-round picks. So they did draft 10 guys, and that's more than I thought they'd end up drafting. All in all, I mean, I think it's a solid draft. I think Brett Veach did a good job of finding guys that fit the needs that this team has. At the same time, they got to go play. And yep. So you can sit here. You know, last year's draft was graded out as pretty good for Veach. This year's draft is grading out to be better. I don't know. Last year, you got three starters in that draft. You got Nick Bolton, a stud at linebacker. You got two starting offensive linemen that are going to be there for a long time, if they stay healthy. I mean, if you get three starters out of this year's draft, that's a great draft. I thought last year's draft was great. Three starters. I mean, if you can get three starters out of every draft, you're doing something. And McDuffie looks like a starter, obviously. Sky Moore, he may or may not be a starter as a receiver, but he's going to be a big part of it. You can consider him a starter, fine. And, you know, I think Chanel's got a chance to start at linebacker in some situations. Cook, maybe. So I think there's a possibility he's got three starters. I mean, Kennard at tackle, if he plays right tackle, he ain't going to take a spot as a guard unless there's an injury. But there is a possibility that you have four starters, maybe three, in this draft. And if you do, that means that you have a pretty good draft.
And I also like some of the, you know, flood the, you know, every once in a while you just have to kind of flood one position with cornerback or defensive back, see what sticks, you know, and maybe it's not the, you know, maybe the second round guy doesn't pan out, but yet the seventh round guy, those things happen. And if you just give yourself more chances, you know, we talked about Juju and Marcus Valdes-Scantling. You know, even if Sky Moore doesn't have a huge year this year, chances are the Chiefs aren't going to get both of Juju and Scantling back next year.
Yeah.
So it gives more, takes a little pressure off of them for this year, but gives them a chance to really hit the ground running next year.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with the running back, too. A lot of the Chiefs running backs are one-year deal guys.
Ronald Jones is.
Yep. So maybe that's a practice squad player all year, and he never touches the ball this year. Mm-hmm. But maybe next year takes Ronald Jones's place if he moves on. So I like everything they did. It's hard to love everything in the middle rounds. Like, you know, we don't know yet. Like you said, it's I think they covered a lot of positions that needed covering. So, you know, I think Veach did well.
Seven of the 10 picks were defensive picks. I'm okay with working on the defense side of the ball. That's where the glaring issues are with this team. You look on offense, to me, the two question marks was you definitely need another receiver to the mix, probably a young receiver, as you said, because Juju and Scantling are on one-year deals. That's probably the bigger reason why you got to have him. Based on the numbers, you don't have to have a receiver in the draft. They got one, and it might be a steal. So I like that. So that was definitely one of the needs on offense, but I don't think it was as big a need as some people make it out to be. The offensive line, right tackle, we talk about there's maybe a need there. So a lineman, that makes sense. And then most people figured they would draft a running back in a late round or find a good one undrafted and sign him. So offensively, I think they did everything. I thought the only thing that they might look at is if they found a good steal of a tight end, possibly. But they didn't, and there weren't a lot of great tight ends in this draft anyway. So I have no problem with what the Chiefs did going defensive heavy. I will say there is one position I'm a little bit surprised that the Chiefs didn't. You know, I'm not shocked that the Chiefs have five DBs that they drafted. I'm a little surprised. But I'll tell you where I'm surprised they didn't draft a position, and that's defensive tackle. The interior of the defensive line, they must apparently feel pretty good. Of course, you got Chris Jones in the middle. You feel good with him when he has his motor rolling. Nnadi, they like, of course. Kalen Saunders been injury-prone the last few years, so forth and so on. I was hoping the Chiefs could find two really good edge rushers in this draft, which I knew was going to be probably a pipe dream because of how low they were drafting in the rounds. Now, if Karlaftis ends up being a really good pass rusher and then Chanel can end up being a linebacker that comes off the edge a lot, they might have their two pass rushers and we don't even know it. Mm-hmm. But there was a wild card that's thrown out yesterday that I heard, and I thought it's an interesting point. What if Brett Veach can get Melvin Ingram back? If on a one-year deal, just like last year, maybe even a two-year deal, he's not going to break the bank. He's still unsigned. If you bring Melvin Ingram back, now you can have a Karlaftis or a Chanel that can maybe rotate in situational pass rushers, in particular Karlaftis from Purdue, and you can keep him fresh and optimize his performance and let him get stronger and bigger in the weight room. And you've got Frank Clark on one side who's not – I still think he's a declining player. I still have concerns with him, no doubt, but at least it's a lot cheaper. His contract, it was restructured. But that's – you know, to me, the biggest issue for the Chiefs going this draft, to me, was pass rush was number one and corner was number two. And the first two picks, corner, pass rusher. Yeah. So they've at least drafted – I hope they didn't draft on – I hope they didn't pass on a best player available because of need, because I think the Chiefs don't need to do that. But I do believe that Brett Veach found the guys on his board where he wanted them and decided, I better get McDuffie traded up, then traded down and still got Sky Moore, which means he didn't want Pickens. A lot of Chiefs fans wanted George Pickens. He didn't want Pickens. He wanted Sky Moore. Yeah. So I think all in all, this draft went the way Brett Veach wanted it. He got guys that fit needs on this team. Now it's up to these players and the coaches to develop these guys and get the best out of them.
Yep. And I saw a lot of rankings and mocks and all that. And I know it's all hearsay and guessing and all that stuff. But I think they did, you know, as far as all the rankings go, get Trent McDuffie. You know, you could argue he was the best player available on the board left at that point.
Which they might have.
And, you know, and then as far as the pass rush, I totally understand where you're coming from. You know, if you're not going to have superstars, then you need bodies to rotate through, and you can optimize that a little bit. There's always going to be camp cuts and, you know, teams that are going to get rid of that veteran. And then Kansas City is going to be a desirable place for cheaper veterans that want to maybe chase that ring one last time or whatever it is. I'll see an opening there. So I think, you know, whether it's Ingram or whether it's some camp cut down the line, team them up with the first round draft pick at 30, you're going to have at least a couple bodies to go through. Right. Now with Frank Clark, and you know, it might not be ideal, but maybe you could piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, I like what they did. I like
too.
What they've done all off season. I understand
too.
Everything.
I do too.
Yeah, it's not easy to lose Tyreek Hill, you know, and there's an argument to be made that maybe, just maybe, the stuff on the field is just a touch, you know, lower offensively than what, you know, what they did. But I think they use that to fill some other holes, and maybe the hole is better than some of the parts. So I don't know.
I think the Chiefs are fine. They're already a good team before this draft. They're a better team after the draft on paper. They fill some needs that they had. They addressed them. And if they could somehow find, if they have the money to get like a cheap veteran pass rusher, affordable one, whether it's Melvin Ingram, maybe one other guy, I still would like to have another pass rusher. Mm-hmm. I really would, because I'm not sold on Clark yet. That's still a concern for me. And when you look at this division, Russell Wilson, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr, all really good quarterbacks, and they have weapons. And if you give them too much time to throw, I don't care how good of a cover corner Trent McDuffie is, he's going to have some problems. Quarterback has 7 seconds to sit back there and throw. And all you got to do is go to the AFC title game. Joe Burrow had been sacked 9 times the game before. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs had Frank Clark, Melvin Ingram, and Chris Jones, and they sacked Joe Burrow all of 1 time. I mean, listen, if they sack the quarterback at least four or five, or a few times, they win that game. And yes, if the offense does a lot better in the second half, that would have helped too. And I still put that on the offense in the second half because the defense held the Bengals to 24 points of regulation. That's not bad considering how explosive that offense was. But still, the point being is that if other teams could sack Joe Burrow and the Bengals quarterback so many times, the Chiefs got way a ton of money in Chris Jones. They had a lot of money in Frank Clark. Melvin Ingram supposedly was a great pickup, which he was for the Chiefs, and they couldn't sniff him. So you've got to get pass rushers. In this league, it's a passing league. So you either got to have top-flight corners that can cover forever, or you need pass rushers to force a quarterback to throw the ball early. And I think it's more important to have the pass rushers because I think you can have great corners, but if another team has all day to throw, the best corner is going to get beat by the best receiver. Yeah. But if you can make a quarterback hurry his throws, take his eyes off of downfield, and he panics and he tucks under runs, or whatever the case may be, holds the ball too long, which you shouldn't hopefully hold it too long because we want to get the pass rush there. I think that's really paramount in this league, the way the league is now. Pass happy, you got all these penalties. The other thing is when you got cover longer, there's a better chance you're going to get called for a defensive hold or PI. So pass rush, I think, is huge. And you look at the division, the Broncos definitely have pass rushers. The Raiders went up and loaded on pass rushers and got Mac. The Chargers have two outstanding pass rushers because the Chargers got Mac. The Raiders picked up, Chandler Jones. There you go. Each team in the AFC West has two bona fide edge pass rushers, and I would argue the Chiefs don't have any. Now, some people would say, well, wait a minute, you got Frank Clark. If Frank Clark plays like he did the playoffs when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, I'm with you. But I haven't seen that consistently of Frank Clark since he's been signed with Kansas City. So that's a major issue for the Chiefs in this division. That I think that's the only thing that stopped this Chiefs from winning AFC West again. Of course, injury to Mahomes, Kelsey, that hurts you big time. But if you're assuming people stay healthy, the biggest thing that's going to prevent the Chiefs from winning division, in my opinion, is a lack of a pass rush. Right.
And they might be trying to combat that just a little bit. There's kind of a theory that a lot of teams are going to kind of try to do to each other what the Chiefs or what teams are trying to do to the Chiefs is like play a little bit farther back, have solid tacklers in the middle, and make the Chiefs, or in this case now, Chargers. The Broncos, Chargers, make them go 10 plays right. And see if you can get a holding penalty, a drop pass, a tip ball, whatever it is, right. And hold them to a field goal or take the ball away once or twice a game and do that and try to win these games. 27-24, and I think maybe the Chiefs are doing that with that second round pick with the safety. Now you can have Thornhill, Reed, maybe this Cook is a sub package. Maybe they're all solid tacklers. That's kind of what Trent McDuffie is known for a little bit. And try to limit some of those big plays against you, and then just hope Mahomes and Kelsey are just a little bit better than the rest of the division.
What stops drives for offenses? Think about it. What stops them? It's going to be
start.
It's going to be a holding penalty, yeah. False. It's going to be a penalty of some kind or a sack.
Yeah.
And if you can get a sack, obviously now you're up against it down in distance. And of course, the Chiefs' offense has been good enough to overcome that many times. But if you can have a negative play, you can force a negative play, whether it's a false start, a hold. And we know if you got great pass rushers, especially at Arrowhead, you're going to see a lot more false starts. Well, we didn't see that in the AFC title game, did we?
No.
So once again, pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. And I still don't think the Chiefs have enough pass rushers. But they definitely got one, if not Chanel being a second. And if they could get another veteran pass rusher, if Melvin Ingram come back, that would be probably beneficial for this team. Frank Clark's got to step it up. Chris Jones has got to step it up. Those two guys got to play better. Now, I know they were banged up some last year, but those two, if this team defense is going to go and be really better, those two still have to step up. And we shall see how it all works out. All in all, Jason and I think the draft was pretty solid.
Pretty good.
All right, the second round of the NBA playoffs. By the way, Caden Davis from Ellsworth High School, he went undrafted, but he picked up by the Denver Broncos. And I think he could be a good slot receiver in the National Football League. Caden from Ellsworth. And also, Skylar Thompson was drafted by the Miami Dolphins. Kyron Johnson, linebacker KU, went to the New York Jets. There's some other K-Staters and KU guys that were undrafted that were signed with other teams. But Skylar Thompson, that was pretty cool video seeing him and react when he was called in the seventh round by the Dolphins. Skylar Thompson's a guy I think that I don't think he's a starting quarterback in a league. I don't think that's it at all. But I do think he's a guy that could be a solid backup that could fill in for a game or two and be solid. He reminds me a little bit of Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was a much higher proclaimed quarterback leaving Missouri than Skyler is from K-State. But they're both not tall quarterbacks, but they're both pretty smart. And Chase Daniel's still in the league years later, and he hasn't had to start many games. Right. And he's made a buttload of money. Right. Skyler Thompson could be a very solid number two quarterback, or three. Even if you're three, you still get paid in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be a starting quarterback in this league, except for filling in here or there. But, you know, for a seventh-round pick, I think that's a decent value for the Dolphins.
Yeah, and where he's going, he's similar in style, or at least has run some of the same things that Tua has done with the screen game and then and the zone
Tyreek
read.
Hill.
Is some, yeah.
Now he has Tyreek Hill. He has Tyreek Hill at K-State.
Right.
Nobody did.
Yeah,
he's Tyreek Hill. That makes you a better quarterback.
I think that's what a lot of teams fail to do with their backup quarterback is kind of style-wise. They just get the best, what they feel is the best backup out there, and it doesn't fit the style that they're playing.
Find the fit.
But I think Skyler fits what Tua does. And
he fits what the Dolphins want to do. I agree with you totally. No doubt. All right, NBA playoffs.
Inbound to Thompson. Thompson fakes, fires, three-pointer. Bang! Klay Thompson from downtown, and the Warriors back up by one. Bane looking. Brooks comes off a screen. Bane to Clark. Clark to Morant. Morant on the drive. Scoop layup. No good. It's over. Golden State holds on and wins game one.
Golden State steals game one in Memphis. Memphis led there for a while, but Draymond Green was ejected controversially in the second quarter for a flagrant foul. It was called a flagrant two, automatic ejection. Many felt it was a flagrant one. Despite losing Draymond Green, the Warriors battled. Jordan Poole has become the star of this team, not Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. Jordan Poole with 31 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds. And he came off the bench. Steph Curry, 24 points. Andrew Wiggins, former Jayhawk, saw a game, 17 points, 8 rebounds. And Ja Morant was fantastic, 34 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds, just missed a triple-double. Jaren Jackson had 33 and 10, but it wasn't enough. And the Warriors have to feel like they stole one because, one, Draymond Green missed the whole second half, and they still were able to win in Memphis. And now they can get greedy because their goal was just to get a split. Now they can be up 2-0 going back to Golden State. So big win for the Warriors, tough loss for the Grizzlies. But based on what we saw yesterday, that's going to be a fantastic series. Hopefully it goes 6 or 7 games. And the East, the Milwaukee Bucks. And I said before the year, I got Bucks Suns in the rematch of the NBA Finals. And then all of a sudden Booker got hurt and Middleton got hurt. And I started freaking out, going, oh, no, that ain't going to happen. Well, the Bucks without Middleton, they haven't lost a game since. And they beat the Celtics in Boston to steal home court advantage, 101-89. Giannis did not play well. This is so funny. He had a triple-double, and he really didn't play that well. 24 points, he was like 8 of 25 shooting, something like that. Not good, but they won because their defense was fantastic. 13 rebounds, 12 assists, triple-double for Giannis, and the Bucks take home field away. So there you go. Home court advantage gone for the Grizzlies and the Celtics. And the best game to get when you're a road team in the NBA playoffs is game one. Yep. That's the one you want to steal because then you put all the pressure on the home team in game two. Tonight, Philly's at Miami at 6:30 on TNT. The story there, Joel Embiid is going to miss the first two games due to an orbital fracture on his face. And facial fracture. He's out for 2 games. He was in the game when the Sixers were up, I think, by almost 30 with 4 minutes to play. Doc Rivers is a veteran coach, and I'm sorry, he should know better. I know you can say, well, you know, the Sixers have blown some games. If you blow a 29-point lead with 4 minutes to go, that's the colossal collapse of all time by Doc Rivers, and he should never be hired again. And he's a really good coach, but his teams have lost 3-1 leads in series 3 times. That would have been the ultimate. So I understand Doc going, well, I better play my best all the way to the end because I just don't want to blow another game. But that just didn't make any sense, and then he got hurt. Now, granted, he could start game one and been healthy tonight and got hurt too,
right,
in fairness to Doc Rivers. But the point is, Joel Embiid was in a game that they had by, 29 points 4 minutes ago. That's when he got hurt. Mild concussion, orbital fracture. He is out for 2 games. That's huge. Philly at Miami, 6:30 tonight on TNT. Dallas at Phoenix, which will be a very entertaining series. Devin Booker's back. Luka Doncic's back. Jalen Brunson's played great. And then you've got, of course, Chris Paul, who's been, is just a good point guard, but was perfect, 14 of 14, 33 points, 8 assists, and 1 turnover in a closeout game against the Pelicans. Dallas at Phoenix tonight, 9 o'clock on TNT. Sorry, Todd, I'm never going to let you live that one down. That is one of your worst takes of all time. I'm just going to tell you, my friend, you have really good takes, and I know I've had bad takes as well, but that is not one of your finest, saying that Chris Paul is not a great point guard. All right. He's just still mad that he does all the State Farm commercials. I'm telling you, that's why Clover doesn't like that. He's just still mad at Chris for promoting State
Farm.
That's
okay if he just would have said that.
Well, he just would have came out and
said
it.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, just say, you know what, you're sore at the guy and it's a personal thing. You know, don't have to make up stuff that makes no sense. Come on now. Todd's like, you son of a... And finally, as the Big 12 was considering a temporary split in the divisions for football, sources tell CBS Sports the NCAA proposal to relax conference championship game rules has complicated matters for the Big 12. That proposal that would no longer require FBS conferences to have divisions in order to hold league title games, effectively giving such conferences better access to the college football playoff by allowing them to match the two best teams. A special Big 12 subcommittee formed to determine how to best incorporate up to 14 teams in conference realignment had expected to finalize league composition schedules this week. However, with that new little bump in the road, the Big 12 now is going to wait on this proposal from the NCAA Football Oversight Committee that would allow all leagues to play without divisions but still hold conference title games without a waiver from the association. So this means that it happened a lot of times in the Big 10. It's happened many times in the SEC, where you saw one year Missouri had four losses and made it to the SEC title game, and they were playing against, I think it was Auburn that year, whoever it was. And there's been years where Alabama has one loss, or LSU has one loss, or even Georgia has one loss, but they're all in the same division. Sometimes the best division, they have three teams, and then a team with four losses overall plays, and you go, whoa, 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 the two best teams is Alabama and LSU. So you're getting punished because they're in the same division. Why shouldn't they play each other again for the championship? Now, of course, Georgia and Alabama, that's how it worked, because Georgia and Alabama are different divisions, SEC. But it's happened many times. It's happened in the Big Ten as well. And I get that. I do. I've always wondered about the division thing. And this goes back to your conference is getting too big to where you can't do a round robin like the Big 12 does.
Right.
So
I like the round robin of the Big 12, but then again, it's like the 1 year that they
They have a rematch automatically.
Yeah,
now.
And now they that 1 year, a few years ago, they really, you know, really said this, you know, two best teams no matter what. And they ended up with some weird three-way tie.
Yeah.
And they couldn't figure it out. And so, yeah, I get it. You know, I understand why you have it both ways. I understand where you have an East and West, and it guarantees you what you think is at least a reasonable conference championship game. Now, we do have the Missouri outlier, but it's usually reasonable. But it's not, it doesn't guarantee you the best by any means. And so
the Big Ten had a team with three or four losses, made the Big Ten title game. Yeah. What is it? Michigan State, Ohio State, if they're all really good, Penn State, they're all in the same division.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Nebraska, if they were ever get decent, they could be in there with three or four losses, and that wouldn't be the two best teams in the Big Ten.
No.
And I think the biggest thing I need to point here is that you had to have a waiver from the NCAA to have a conference title game. If you didn't have two divisions, the AAC got a waiver, and then the Big 12 played the round robin, so that granted the ability to play a conference title game. Now that waiver won't even have to exist anymore. So you can go ahead and have a conference title game no matter what. It's up to you, your conference, to decide on that. So that's another part of this consideration. But Big 12, they'll get it figured out. It's just things have been put on hold because of this new proposal. It makes sense to me. At the same time, you know, if you're I don't know. There's going to be flaws with no matter what system you have. But people that are in the same division with Alabama are now going, okay, one loss Alabama doesn't mean I can't play an SEC title game.
Right.
You know, that's good news for Texas A&M, LSU, teams that are in that division. It's good news for, say, a Penn State, a Michigan, Ohio State. Or, you know, Michigan, Ohio State might be the two best teams in the Big Ten. And then they play late in the season, Michigan wins, Ohio State's completely out of the Big Ten title game. It's like, wait a minute, they're still the two best teams. Why shouldn't they play again in a couple weeks? I don't mind a rematch. What I really hate to see is the Big 12 have Oklahoma State, and then possibly have a rematch a week later. You know, I don't want to see them play back-to-back weeks. Like, if you have a rematch from earlier in the conference season, there's no way to prepare for that.
But at the same time, I don't want that game one of the conference season either. I want that marquee game at the end to hopefully settle something. But yeah, it's just tricky all the way around. There's no guarantee either way, but you just have to make a decision and go with it.
What was the scenario this year? Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Oklahoma State would have lost to Oklahoma. Then they could have possibly had met again in the Big 12 title game, if I remember correctly, and if Baylor lost. And so they would have met back-to-back weeks. Instead, Oklahoma State knocked out Oklahoma. Then Lincoln Riley left right after that. So anyway, so that's a look at the sports world here today on the ticket on a Monday, May the 2nd. Once again, Chiefs draft, everybody, Chiefs Kingdom, you know it. A+, every one of these guys is going to be superstars. Chiefs are going to win 6 Super Bowls in a row because of this draft. That's the optimistic way of looking at it. The pessimistic view is all these guys suck and that they'll never mount to
we'll
anything.
Just have to replace them next year.
Yeah.
With another A+ draft.
Can't wait for next year's draft because we're going to do even better next year. Odds are it's going to be somewhere in between. It's going to be a solid draft, probably a good draft, maybe average. I don't think it's a horrible draft. I don't think it'll end up being a horrible draft. I don't know if I can sit here and, you know, years later go back and say this was an A+ draft. I don't think anybody's had an A+ draft. Well, the Chiefs did, just with one pick. Patrick Mahomes, that's an A+ draft.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.